mic is not on.
Good morning. Welcome to the February 28th meeting of the Legislative Committee of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. Marcy, could we start with a roll call?
On the roll for the Legislative Committee meeting of February 28th, 2019, Director Bowders, Director Canepa, Director Cutter, Director Joya, Director Haggerty, Director Ju, Director Mitchoff, Director Sparing, Director Wagenknecht, Committee Vice Chair Abe Koga, Committee Chair Kim.
Here.
We have a quorum, and I would also like to acknowledge the presence of Director Niss.
Hi, Liz.
Good morning, Liz.
We're graced by your presence.
Would you all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, I know we have a couple of committee members that are en route, so let's get started anyway. This is the 2019 edition of the Legislative Committee, so we have a couple new members joining us. So I want to welcome Director Cutter, and Director Ju is also going to be joining the committee, and want to thank Director Niss for her service over the past year. So for your benefit, Director Cutter, we are going to be meeting each month, probably through May, and we're going to be having a fall meeting as well to wrap up the session. So we felt that it was necessary given how active this year is going to be. For example, last Friday was just the last day to introduce new bills. So we feel monthly meetings are the way to go. And so we'll be reaching out to you or your staff to check your calendars and get those meetings booked. With that said, let's go ahead and move on to item number two, which is public comment on non-agenda matters. Marcy, do we have any slips?
I do not.
Great. Thank you. Let's move on to item number three, which is approval of the minutes of January 14th.
I would move the minutes. Second.
The motion is second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, moving along. We come to item number four, which is consideration of new bills, and we welcome Alan for this item. I was wondering, did we see 3,000 bills introduced this year yet?
So in the hall, in the halls of the Capitol early last week, what I heard was the over-under number for bills was somewhere around 2,500, and I think when we ended the bill deadline on Friday, it was about close to 2,700 bills. So it got very busy last week. Our bill from Assembly Member Wicks was introduced on Tuesday of last week, and that was Assembly Bill 836. By Friday, we were up to Assembly Bill 1750. And so her bill made it halfway in the total with only 3 days left, and it got very busy right after that. So as you said, it's going to be a very busy session this year. I'll start off briefly before I talk about some of the new bills. Just a quick update on AB 617 going forward. What we're looking at. So for starters, there is a legislative hearing that's scheduled March 18th in the Capitol, which is a Monday. It'll be all afternoon from 2 p.m. until 5 p.m. And the legislature has requested the presence of all six air pollution control officers for the 10 communities that were identified as first-year communities. And so Jack has already RSVP'd to attend that meeting on the 18th. And for that legislative hearing, each air district will get some time to talk about their communities that were chosen last year, the work that's occurred over the last year, and what's planned for the future, and then community leaders from those communities, if they attend the hearing, will have the opportunity to provide their perspective. And so staff has been we've been working to make sure that we're well represented, and we're gonna show the legislature that the Bay Area's communities have been well treated, and that we're leading the charge in the AB 617 program. So we're looking forward to that. And also, as part of that, we're hosting a tour of the West Oakland community next Friday with some legislative budget staff and an assembly staff to update them on what's happening in West Oakland. And so it'll be a van tour. I'm driving the van, and we're gonna make a trip through West Oakland, and then do a presentation for them at the West Oakland Environmental Indicators Project. And so I think it'll be a good display for the staff of the assembly to show them what we've been up to the last year. So that'll be good as well. And finally, on AB 617, the Legislative Analyst's Office has, as they do this time of year, they take a look at the governor's proposed budget, and they start writing opinions on various budget matters. And last week, they issued a report on natural resources and environment issues related to the governor's budget. They spent a lot of time talking about AB 617, and I think the write-up that they did as part of that report was very well done, and properly expressed a lot of things that we've been telling members of the legislature and ARB staff about what we see needs to happen in the AB 617 program going forward to continue to make it a viable and worthwhile program. And so the Legislative Analyst's report talks about the need for sustained funding to air districts for 617 so that we can have some certainty about employee staffing and programs. It talks about the need for sustained and predictable levels of incentive funding. Since a lot of emission reduction planning that districts are going to do rely on emission reductions coming from incentive programs. And so if we can't estimate what we're going to get for emission reductions from incentive programs, it makes it harder for us to fill in the gap with emission reductions from other things that the air district would have to do, rural development or relying on state programs or other policies or land use matters. And so they make some other recommendations, but the bottom line is the LAO's office has put forth a pretty good argument that we'll be able to rely on going forward to make our case about more predictable, sustained funding going forward. So so I was happy to see that. Okay, so now yes,
Director Cutter.
Thank you. So I know you said that you're going to go visit Sacramento with the CARE communities and present to them and tell them all the information from the community itself. Are these the ones that have already been established, or we're thinking that we're probably going to be part of the 880 corridor, you know, East Oakland and San Leandro? So you're not ready for us yet, right?
No, this is the 10 previously selected communities.
Okay, well, we're ready for you. So when you're ready for us, we'll be ready. Thank you.
We'll keep that in mind. Okay, so what I'll do now is everyone should have a revised bill discussion list. And so the one that was included in the original agenda packet, February 11th, I alluded to it earlier. We were still pretty early in the bill introduction timeline, and so there wasn't a whole lot to report at the time. But since then, as you can see, the bill discussion list has grown quite extensively. There's a couple bills that at the last legislative committee meeting I had proposed considering for positions at this upcoming meeting, and so we'll talk about those briefly, and then I'll highlight from this list some bills that we'll need to keep track of going forward, And as we get more details at future Ledge Committee meetings, we can decide whether we want to take support or oppose positions on some other selected bills. So I'll start with the bills that we had proposed to take positions on. And we'll go with AB 40 to begin with, and that is on. Okay, so that is the agenda 4B attachment. So as I mentioned at the last meeting, this bill by Assemblymember Ting seeks to create an electric vehicle comprehensive strategy, and it basically. It's basically meeting or asking to look to the 2040 time period, look at all the electric vehicles that we've proposed need to be on California streets by then, and getting people together to say, how are we going to do that? What's the role of incentives? What's the role of planning for these vehicles? What's the role of infrastructure? And it lists different agencies and stakeholders that should be a part of that strategy document, and then asks for that strategy to be completed in January of 2021. So I went when we talked about it at the last meeting. We just noted that we'd like air districts to really be explicitly identified as being a stakeholder. I talked with the assembly member staff about this. He agreed that air district participation was going to be an important part of the strategy development. The bill hasn't been amended yet, but I have I'm satisfied that as we move that bill forward, we're going to get the acknowledgement that we need to support the bill. And so I would recommend that we take a support position, and we'll just make sure that as the bill is amended, the air districts are properly represented.
All right, let's pause there. We did talk about this last meeting, and we have every reason to want to support this. Based on your further intel, Ting's office is going to work with us to address our concerns. Any comments or concerns? Would that be a first?
I would make the motion. Second.
So moved. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So the next one we'll talk about is Assembly Bill 210, not to be confused with Senate Bill 210. There's already been a bit of confusion. So Assembly Bill 210 is by Assembly Member Randy Vopel from down in Southern California. And this is a bill, these bills come up every couple of years. This would provide an exemption to smog check for light duty vehicles that are from model years 1976 to 1983. So right now, previous smog check requirements exempt light duty vehicles pre-76, and this was from a law that's many decades old. And so what this bill would seek to do is to further exempt another 8 years of the oldest cars that currently are not exempt from smog check. So I drove, I had the pleasure of driving a 1978 LTD back when I was in high school, and it wasn't a great vehicle then, and I can't imagine over the last 30 years it's gotten any better. and so, you know, these are the vehicles that we should not be exempting from smog check. When you look at the Bureau of Automotive Repairs and smog check compliance rates, what you see is that for model years 1976 through 1983, the failure rate for these vehicles is 25%. And so smog check is not a bright line for every vehicle where you have to go in and it has to meet this emission rate, and if it doesn't, it fails. Smog check is a program run by the Bureau of Automotive Repairs where they look at the model year of the vehicle, they look at the emission rates of that vehicle when it first hit the streets, and then they allow some degradation over the years based on the age of the vehicle. And so really what smog check requires is for your vehicle to be maintained, and so if you can maintain your vehicle you're going to pass smog check because you'll get a little bit of leeway as the years go by based on the age of the vehicle.
Hey, so Alan,
yes,
just to cut you short here, this sounds like a winner of a bill. is there some motivation that we're not aware of for this bill? Is there an environmental justice angle or something?
No, this is as I mentioned, these bills come up every couple years, and what the argument that typically is made, which I'm not sure is valid, is that these are classic vehicles, and so I'm sure whether a vehicle is a classic vehicle is really in the eye of the beholder, and I'm sure there's some vehicles from the 70s which we can agree have some sort of classic attributes. But, you know, definitely the 70s weren't a great time for car manufacturing, and there's not a whole lot of those vehicles that really would be classic vehicles. And so it's really just a way to exempt some older
cars. All right, given that very little good came out of the 70s. Just wanted to mix it up. And welcome Director Jude to the Legislative Committee. Is there any discussion on the committee, or does someone want to make a motion?
You're opposing.
So I'd recommend oppose. I think if we just estimate, instead of 25% of these vehicles failing smog check in every given year, if we say that we're not going to let these vehicles, or we're not going to make these vehicles go through smog check, and then the lack of maintenance on these vehicles would basically mean that half of them, you know, would get worse over time. Well, from a statewide perspective, we're looking at about 5.5 tons per day of additional emissions in the state. You know, this and transportation emissions statewide are 60, 70, 80% based on where you are in any part of the state. And so, you know, this is an area where we don't need extra emissions. We should be clamping down on them.
All right. We have a motion and a second, I believe. Did you get?
I'll second it if no one else.
Okay. And before we go any further, Marcy, I trust that if we have any public speakers, you'll let us know. All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye. Director Canepa, did you have?
Oh, no, I thought you wanted me to restate the motion.
No.
We are really good. Onward.
Okay, so the last one we'll talk about with a position is SB 210, and so this is a bill by Senator Leyva, and this would take the opposite tact. And would institute a pilot program for a smog check program for heavy duty diesels, and so we had talked about this at the last meeting. Heavy duty diesel trucks have very little in the way of actual smog check type requirements, and so this program would start a smog check program for diesel vehicles similar to light duty vehicles, and I'd recommend that we support that.
Alrighty, any comments?
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Unless there's any further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Okay, so I'll take everyone on a whirlwind tour of some other a couple selected bills from this list, and if there's one that I miss as I'm going through, bring it to my attention, and I'll do my best to describe it. As I mentioned, there was about 1,000 bills in the last couple days that were introduced. I haven't read them all. I haven't talked with all the author's staff yet, but I will. But I can do my best to let you know.
Tom always did.
Okay. So the first one is Assembly Bill 315 from Christina Garcia. I only bring this up because Christina Garcia and Assembly Member Eduardo Garcia were the led the charge that made AB 617. And so between the two of them, we always are interested in what their thoughts are on AB 617 and they're interested in how they're interested in improving the program. And so this bill right now is related to emissions reporting from stationary sources. And so that is an area that is very sensitive for the Air District and all Air Districts statewide, because we're in the process now of developing a statewide visualization database, and with an expectation that that for the most part every stationary source that districts have permits on are going to be submitting data to this visualization database. And it's turned out to be a huge workload requirement for the Air Districts, for a lot of sources this is a good idea if there's major emissions associated, but when you start getting down to the smallest sources in any given air district, you have to start weighing the benefits and disbenefits of the workload associated with putting those emissions into a database. And so we're always interested in what she has in mind, and it's a spot bill right now, but it'll be filled out in the future with, and I'll bring that back to the committee at the next meeting. Same thing with AB 352. This is Assembly Member Eduardo Garcia bill, and this is a similar to a bill that he ran last year, and it's it on the face of it, it sounds like it's not important to us, but it actually is. And what this bill does is it would allow the daytime populations of 617 communities to be used as a weighting factor for grants and incentive money and implementation funding. And so when we talk about daytime populations, he's specifically referring to daytime populations of Imperial County and San Diego County, which have an influx of daytime population coming from Mexico. And so a lot of other AB 617 communities aren't going to have that population increase during the day, and so we just want to make sure that that our programs stand on their own without support coming from increases in population. So we'll be watching that one as it goes forward. Assembly Bill 661. This one right now deals with best available control technology. As I mentioned, it's a spot bill on this spreadsheet. Of what I've learned since the bill has been introduced is that Assemblymember McCarty, he's from the Sacramento area, he is interested in some sort of wildfire smoke response, and this bill is going to be changed later this week to become a wildfire smoke response bill. It may be related to schools, the author's office is waiting for further bill language from the Sacramento Metro Air District and the City of Sacramento. And so we'll have a better idea of probably later today. The CAPCOA Legislative Committee is meeting, and so we'll have a better idea later today of what that bill might turn into. But hopefully it'll be something that moves our current wildfire response programs forward, and so we'll be tracking that.
Great. Director Wagenknecht.
Is there any – that's the – the, where my question was go, is there any way that they would fold theirs into ours or work together on the two?
Well, one would hope.
Make it consistent.
and so the Assemblymember McCarty has been, I think he's been looking for some sort of wildfire-related bill over the last month. In the beginning, I had heard that he was interested in a bill that would codify some sort of guidelines for school response to wildfire smoke events. Also, whether schools stay open, close, that type of thing. But in the intervening time period, our district and CAPCOA has met with Senator McGuire's staff, actually Senator McGuire himself and the California Department of Education, and we've offered to work on a template that the State Department of Education could use to help their schools develop their own guidelines with the support of their local air district. And so we took care of something without actually needing legislation to make us do it. And so that we're hoping to have that initiative done in the next month or so before wildfire season kicks off. Now we're not sure what the assembly member has in mind.
Great. Hey, Alan.
Yes.
You jumped over AB 423, and I just wanted to get an update from you. Every once in a while, we have a bill that's floated around that deals with the issue of board memberships, and what we know is on our board, what we need are more board members. And I wanted to ask you, what's the status of that San Diego bill, and could it indirectly affect us?
So the San Diego bill is an interesting bill. The San Diego County APCD is the largest air district in California that still uses their County Board of Supervisors as their Air Pollution Control District Board. And so the board is five county supervisors. The county supervisors meet as the county supervisors, and then they adjourn as the county supervisors, reconvene as the Air District Board, do their business, and then convene again as the Board of Supervisors. And so this bill from Assemblymember Gloria, who's also running to be the mayor of San Diego, would change the composition of the San Diego Air District Board to, I believe, 11 members. And it would be two county supervisors, three City of Sacramento representatives. There would be a rotation of an additional three board members from different cities within San Diego County. And then the last three positions would be public at-large positions that would represent, I think, the scientific community, the environmental justice community, and then there's one other representation that I don't remember offhand. So this is it would increase the board size from 5 to 11. I haven't heard San Diego County and the Air District itself have been rather quiet on their opinions on the bill, and so it'll be interesting to see how that moves forward. But as I read it, this wouldn't have any impact on the Bay Area because the San Diego Board would get their own section in the Health and Safety Code specifically reserved for them on this.
Director Haggerty.
Yeah, it's good that you said at this point. But you also said at this point. So what are we doing to make sure we don't get drug into this bill? I mean, there's a good chance.
I will go talk with the assembly member staff, and we have talked with them in the past, but we were told that they were only interested in changing the composition of the San Diego board, but I'll make it clear in future visits that we'd like to remain.
I mean,
I
just think that there are people in this area or a person in this area that would like to use this opportunity to maybe reconfigure our board too. I think it's dangerous, the legislation's out there, because once it gets moving, it can be amended at any point. And if we're not on the front side of it, we're going to be on the back side.
I'll continue to make that point.
I know you were at CAPCOA last year, but when a similar bill was floating around that could open up the Pandora's box within that air district, we were just concerned that we wanted to cover our flanks and make sure that this wasn't used as a Trojan horse to change our board. So,
okay, I'll make sure that that doesn't happen. Okay. Go to AB 1038, Merit Suchi. So this is a pretty simple bill, and Damian Breen can answer any questions you might have about it. But simply stated, it would allow air districts to recoup more of the costs of their costs from third party scientific and technical review. And so as I understand, there are situations where we'd be limited from collecting the full cost recovery of using a third party to do something, and this bill would provide the ability to do that. If you want to talk a little bit more about that.
So I think you're all very well aware, there's a number of members of the Budget and Finance Committee, about our cost recovery policy in this air district, and how we've increased it gradually over time. That's because there are limitations on the amount of any fees that can be raised on any facility in any given year, 15% being the ceiling for the total cost for those facilities. So we need to touch base with the auditor to understand what the motivation is. We do, from time to time, use third parties to help us do things like health risk assessments and those type of engineering and other studies. We do charge fees for them, but they are limited by that 15%. So we're not certain whether that's the auditor's motivation or not, but Alan is going to go back and we'll seek a little bit more clarity and come back to you on what the intent is here.
Thank you. Okay, so Assembly Bill 1124 by Assembly Member Mainshine. As an aside, he was the Assembly Member that recently changed his party affiliation from Republican to Democrat about a month ago, and so this bill, which has been sponsored by the California Labor Federation, would it needs a bit of work, but what it requires is the California Occupational Safety and Health Standards Board to develop by June 13th of this year. So it would be an emergency regulation. They would develop a regulation that would require employers to provide respirators to their employees that could reasonably be expected to be exposed to wildfire smoke during their outdoor activities. And then it furthermore would exempt those employers from needing a medical professional to be involved in fitting or providing those respirators to the employees. And it also references usage of a local AQI as part of that regulatory process that would be used to declare the times when those respirators would be provided. So there's several issues with the bill. It refers to respirators without talking about what type of respirators. The exemption for medical professionals to be involved is probably going to be concerning to the public health community, and then using an air quality index as a proxy for exposure has some issues as well, because there's a lot of different AQIs that are in use. Some use ozone, some use ozone and particulate, and if we really want to talk about worker exposure in terms of a prescription, we should be looking at micrograms per cubic meter, and looking at a time period for worker exposure that's different from the way we use the AQI, which is based on a 24-hour standard. And so there's a lot of issues with the bill, and I've met with the author's staff, talked with them over this a little bit, and we'll see. We'll make some recommendations. I think what this bill really should strive to do initially is just have the state look at a standard, an actual shorter-term health standard, rather than a 24-hour standard. You know, would be a good first step, and then go from there. But we'll see what the author has to say.
Director Cutter.
Thank you for that. So I'm looking at from a city's budget point of view, and providing respirators, not knowing what kind they're talking about, so not something that you can actually get shared respirators. I mean, so if we could get more information about that. And then at what point, it just seems like another way of liability for a city that all of a sudden if your worker's out, now they, you know, they can talk about the liability of having smoke issues and so forth. And so it would be a really good figure out how the sensors are going to work. If we don't have sensors in our community, are we really relying on sensors from how many miles away and, you know, all of that to bring back so people are more aware of what's going on. Thank you.
Those are good points.
I was going to say, there are also a plethora of state and federal worker protection laws that are based on an eight-hour time-weighted average and that do cover exposure for workers for particulate matters. So, as Alan said, there are quite a number of issues with this bill, including the ones that you brought up. So we'll be working with the auditor to make sure that all of that is kind of taken into account as we roll forward. The standards and how they plan on currently judging or implementing it, we think could run afoul of those federal and state standards. So there's quite a bit of reconciliation that needs to be done with this bill before it's ready for prime time.
Okay, moving along. So Assembly Bills 1406 and 1418, I'll just lump these together. These both are spot bills right now, so they're subject to change in the future. They both relate to the State Air Resources Board. I think one of them, I'm not sure if it's 1406 or 1418. 1406 also talks about CARB's relationship with local air districts. So we don't know what the author has in mind yet, but I need to make a trip over there to find out what the bills eventually may relate to, and so we'll definitely keep our eyes on those, but I haven't gotten to those yet. Assembly Bill 1430 by Eduardo Garcia. This would have the state redefine what cost effectiveness is. And the bill right now is very vague, but in a visit to the author's office, what I understand is that the assembly member would like to revise the definition of cost effectiveness, which to us means how much money are we spending to get a ton of reductions, pretty simply. The cost effectiveness definition for all state programs, not just air district programs, but cost effectiveness would be revised to include the job creation aspect of grant and incentive funding. And so depending on the type of incentive program for air districts, that would be pretty difficult. For a Carl Moyer grant, if we provide a grant of $50,000, which allows someone to purchase a new piece of equipment and scrap the old piece of equipment, there's incremental work associated with the purchase and sale and manufacture of that new piece of equipment, with the work required to scrap the old piece of equipment. You know, I'm not sure that we could really translate that into an overall jobs requirement or job, you know, increase over the course of the Moyer program, and so things like that would be difficult. If we were looking at job creation numbers for other types of incentive programs that you know, maybe that would allow building compost facilities or urban forestry projects where you're planting trees or doing something like that, I think it would be easier to make that determination. But so we'll be watching this bill as it gets amended and moved forward to make sure that that the author understands there's some differences in the way we do cost effectiveness determination. So, Damon, you want to say anything about that?
Director Wagon Connect.
Well, the whole point of the Moyer program is to reduce the air pollution. So it's the more simply we can get that, you know, A plus B equals C. It would be nice. It'd be nice to keep that as simple as possible.
I think we're in agreement on that.
The only other, you know, this might provide us an opportunity to maybe have a discussion with them about including greenhouse gases in the Moyer program. But as Alan points out, you know, when we renewed the Karen Moyer program as part of ABA about 4 or 5 years ago, most of the statistics and numbers we had were very easy for us to produce. The jobs creation numbers actually took the longest amount of time and were pretty esoteric, in my opinion, based on the fact that, you know, as Alan said, you know, scrapping one piece of equipment or buying one truck, how many jobs does that equate to? It might be difficult. But if the scope of this were narrowed maybe to apply to cap and trade programs where, you know, you're building a rail system or you're doing a forestry program, maybe that might be more appropriate.
Okay, Assembly Bill 1589, Assembly Member Salas, he's from the Bakersfield area. So this is a spot bill right now. It's subject to being amended. What I understand is this bill is going to direct CARB to revise their Carl Moyer program to allow changeouts of old gasoline tractors with new Tier 4 diesel tractors, and this is at the request of the San Joaquin Air District. So apparently in San Joaquin, there's a population of older gasoline-powered tractors. The district would like to be able to swap them out for new Tier 4 diesel tractors. We can do diesel to diesel under those circumstances, but gas to diesel currently would not be allowed because there's no diesel emissions from a gas-powered tractor, and then you're going to a new diesel-powered tractor, and there's going to be an incremental increase in diesel emissions. CARB has said that that doesn't meet the Carl Moyer requirements, and apparently has San Joaquin and CARB have been at odds on this, and so they've asked for legislation to give guidance to CARB on that.
So just out of curiosity, is switching from gas to Tier 4 diesel an upgrade?
Well, I think there's going to be a slight increase in diesel emissions, but it's outweighed by a tremendous decrease in NOx and ROG emissions. And so in the aggregate, it's great for NOx and ROG. And on the downside, you get a tiny bit of diesel emission increase.
But that's PM.
Yeah, I think the CARB's issue with it is that increases the in terms of PM, the exposure risk becomes higher. But San Joaquin, in their defense, are dealing with severe non-attainment for ozone. So they in their opinion, have weighed the risk of increasing the PM versus the reduction in NOx. And because the reduction in NOx is so great, that's why they're pushing forward with this particular bill, because they believe that one health risk outweighs the other.
Okay. Assembly Bill 1744, another Salas bill. This was originally for school buses, retrofit and replacement. I hear it's going to be amended. I won't spend too much time about it. It's the current version of it gives a hierarchy for school bus replacement projects using the last remaining bits of Prop 1B funding. It provides that funding in order to federal extreme non-attainment areas, which is San Joaquin and South Coast. And then the hierarchy after that goes to small air districts and medium air districts, and then leaves out the Bay Area, San Diego, and Sac Metro. And so so our understanding is the bill is going to be changed. It may end up being something different than school buses entirely, but if it remains in the way that it's written, I'll likely come back to the board next time around with an opposed position if we can't make changes to it. Okay, so now we'll get over to the Senate bills. Senate Bill 45, this is a bond, Wildfire, Drought, and Flood Protection Bond Act. So if the bill was successful, it would place a bond measure on the ballot either in the spring primary of 2020 or the fall 2020 ballot. And it would—it's for a bond of $4 billion for a variety of wildfire, drought, and flood activities. There's a line item in that bond measure which would provide climate resiliency money to a list of programs, including cooling centers. And I've asked the author's office to include clean air centers in addition to cooling centers. And our argument that I provided to the staff was that the differences between a cooling center and a clean air center in many cases are going to be minimal. They're both ventilation systems of you know, some form or another, and so we'd if we're successful in getting this added in and it goes to a vote and the bond measure passes, this could be a long-term way to have some funding for our clean air incentive program.
Alan?
Yes.
One question on that. When you're looking at such a massive bond measure with so much potential revenue, is it common for these kinds of bond measures to have specific earmarks, whether it be dollar amounts or percentages that are dedicated to certain kinds of programs?
Yeah, it is common. Once you when you look at some of these measures, when they go for an actual vote, you'll see lists of dollar amounts for different types of projects, and in some bonds, I think you even see earmarks to specific actual projects. So the way this one's written, the $4 billion is divided up in 10 categories. Those categories right now there are listed, but they don't have actual percentages or dollar amounts assigned to them. They're just left blank. Blank percent will go towards these types of projects, and the total list is actually pretty small, but there's some big ticket items in there for flood protection and wildfire and drought protection, and so if we could get in on one of those lists, I think it would be good.
So you could see a line item that says X percent for the 9 counties of the Bay Area for this type of program?
Well, I think you could see X percent for climate resiliency projects to include cooling centers, clean air centers, urban forestry, things like that. And so we might not be able to get it to a point where it says this amount for clean air centers, but we can get it whittled down so that we're within a smaller pot where the amount of money is known.
Right. Director Cutter and then Damien.
So one of the things that I'm thinking about is the clean air centers, which we have a senior center and a couple centers, but mainly school centers. And with all of the money, I haven't kept up as close as I should have probably on the bonds that are being now released for school districts, but if there's some way that they could kind of put the two together, that money used from the school district bond for improvement could be then used as a match for money that was coming from this for a clean air center. I think that would be really an incentive for a lot of our schools, because to take it from zero, you don't have it. But if you've got the incentive to, get some extra money from both sources, you'd probably get more schools to, do the work. So.
I was advised yesterday that that one of the previous school bonds, I think it's Proposition 39 or something
yeah,
like that, would potentially allow funding for schools for weatherization or energy efficiency, which could include ventilation systems. And so I have it on my list to look into that to see if there's an actual possibility of.
39 was mainly for energy efficiency and so forth. But, yeah, if you could put the two together, it would really be – a lot of times schools don't have that extra match, and so if they could use their money from that for a match, then we might have something going. Thank you.
Okay. Senate Bill 216, Galgiani. Senator Galgiani is from the Stockton area, and so this bill – would change the Carl Moyer program to allow a used vehicle trade down, and specifically the sponsors of the bill are the Natural Gas Vehicle Coalition, and so their intent is to create a trade down program for used natural gas vehicles. This bill came as a surprise to us. Usually, if there's changes to Carl Moyer. Since this is a district-run program, we kind of like to know about them before they come out in bill form. And so it was a little bit of a surprise to us. We've talked with the author's office and the sponsors about the bill. In general, trade down programs have some inherent problems with them. In a traditional Carl Moyer program, you trade an old piece of equipment for a new piece of equipment. And so for a trade-down program, you trade an old piece of equipment for a new piece of equipment. And instead of scrapping that old piece of equipment, you give that old piece of equipment to someone who has an even older and worse piece of equipment. And so it sounds like a neat idea and concept, but what air districts have experienced is that when you have that old piece of equipment and you're trying to find an older piece to swap it for, a lot of times that old piece of equipment may not be quite as roadworthy or clean as it was 9 months ago or a year ago when you signed the agreement to do the Carl Moyer original trade-in. And so air districts that have tried these types of programs have had to spend their own funding to basically take these used vehicles and make them roadworthy and make them clean enough that they could justify swapping it out with something even dirtier. So Damien, you want to give any your perspective on that?
I think with the scarcity of the grant dollars that we have, the incremental benefit from a third party trade down doesn't justify the program itself. What we've seen is, you know, San Joaquin Valley ran one of these programs about 2 years ago, and they were putting up to $5,000 to $6,000 into the trade down truck to get it to be roadworthy. Knowing that you know, I think most of us in the area of these vehicle programs expect somewhere below a 5 to 15% in that range improvement in kind of a truck over a period of a year after it's been maintained. So the increment that you get from the trade down program really isn't worth it. And if we're talking about natural gas trucks, it's really, you know, you're narrowing the focus even more to a community. In this area, we have got about 23 natural gas stations, so the use case isn't high. So I think we're going to try and work with the author to explain that, and this might be one where we'll talk to them, and we may be coming back to you with an opposed position on this particular one.
Director Wagon Connect?
Are they looking at doing a pilot program? Yeah, I can see that their area may have a real market for that, and this is something they're trying to do, and that it could actually help clean up their air in their area, and that it just doesn't work in the Bay Area or in most other districts. So that I don't, you know, that could be a question we...
I think that's a good point. Maybe it could work in the South Coast or San Diego areas where they have more natural gas infrastructure, but for the Bay Area and San Joaquin, I don't think that is going to make a significant difference.
Well, the Stockton area, though, isn't that in the San Joaquin?
Yes, it is. But to my knowledge, I don't believe they have significant infrastructure that could support this particular program. But it's a good point.
Right. And so I think what the author's office and the sponsors would counter with is that having CARB create program guidelines for a program like this doesn't in the end require an air district to do it. It just provides as an option that air district could opt into if they were interested in it. And so one of the things, after we talk with the author's office more and see how this plays out, we'll have to, you know, if it's really just going to be a voluntary thing that districts can opt into, there might be no point in really taking a position, and we can just let individual air districts decide whether they want to try their hand at the program or not. Okay, Senate Bill 629 from Senator McGuire. This bill is a spot bill. I met with the author's office yesterday. My understanding is that the bill is going to be changed in the near future to address emissions from wineries. And I don't have this is something that we saw at the end of session last year. I don't have any details on if the bill is going to be any different from what was proposed last time around. And so really, I'm withholding judgment right now until we see some legislative language. But we're definitely on the alert for what's going to come out of this bill, because we thought that we had made some progress with the wineries on not only what the Air District's plans were in the future on winery emissions, but also, you know, what's required on a statewide basis. You have anything you want to add, Wayne or Damian? I think we're withholding judgment right now until we see what happens. Okay, and so that's it for my quick run through. Is there anything out there that? I will mention one more that didn't make it on the list because it escaped all the Air District's attention until yesterday. It didn't hit any of the keywords that we would use to search through all the bills, but it's SB 460. It's from Senator Bell, and so this is a bill that looks to be a. It'll end up being a sort of an omnibus fix the DMV bill, from what I understand. But so the reason we heard about it was the bill states as an intent for the legislature to look at creating a biennial vehicle registration program instead of an annual vehicle registration program, and so it caught our attention. From a TV story about biennial DMV registration, because air districts collect some funding through annual vehicle registrations, and so the light bulb went on that you know this could have a big impact for us. I went and talked with the author's office, and so the biennial registration idea, it's just an idea, but really the intent of the bill is to look at ways to improve the efficiency of the DMV. There's going to be a legislative hearing on the DMV in 2 weeks, and then what comes out of that legislative hearing may find its way into this bill going forward. But from the staff I talked to, the intent is not to do a two-for-one, 2 years for the price of one vehicle registration. The plan would be to maintain the registration fees at the same level. If it went to biennial registration, it would basically be double the DMV registration every 2 years instead of a single fee every year. So no intention to actually change the vehicle fees on an annual basis.
So just to provide a little perspective here, you went through almost 3,000 bills and flagged those that you think might be of interest, and we're down to about 100.
I might have missed one or two, but so.
You'll really know next month. I mean, when you look at all these bills, even on the short list here, some of these are really going to go nowhere and are not bills we're going to spend time on. You today flagged about 15 that off the bat are things that you think are of direct interest to us. But that list could grow, and you'll know more next month when we have our next update, right?
Right. In my mind, when I read bills, you have to think about, is this a good bill that really would need our support and should make it to the finish line? Those are ones that we're going to want to definitely take a support position on. There are good bills out there that probably don't need our active support, that we can just allow to go through the process, provide some comments, express our verbal support here and there. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have bills which are not great ideas, some of which may end up dying of benign neglect throughout the process, and then some which we may want to take a stand on because we're the Bay Area AQMD and this is what we do, and so those will actually take the opposed position or work actively to keep from moving forward.
Great. With that said, let's move, Director Cutter.
I just have one worried the spot bills, like I noticed there's one from Bonta and I forget where else, in these Green New Deal. Do you have any idea what that's going to mean? I mean, Green New Deal means a lot of different things to different people and different groups, but in terms of us looking at this.
Right, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there are some bills. When you look at the list of bills, there are some bills which would declare a climate emergency. There's resolutions and bills that talk about the Green New Deal or a California version of the Green New Deal. And so I think I think the legislative committee and is probably going to have to think at some point, do we want to support some of these concepts going forward? If we can understand what they actually represent, do we want to take a support position on some of these resolutions or bills going forward, or whether they're just sort of interesting to read into and watch?
So the first is to get a definition, and then after the definition comes in, figure out where we're at. Thank you.
Director Canepa.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to sort of springboard off what Director Cutter had said. So is there any language on the Green New Deal legislation on the AJR?
The AJR.
AJR 7.
Right. I think that's expressing support for the federal Green New Deal.
Okay.
And so that's just a resolution of support. The one that the actual bill for the Green New Deal, I think that's the Bonta bill. That one right now looks like, the way I remember it is, it states it's the intent of the legislature to develop a California Green New Deal, and so it really doesn't have, it's more of a placeholder for future things to be added on, but it doesn't have a lot of meat on it yet.
So one's in support of the federal legislation, correct? That's the AJR
right.
7 by
yes.
Gloria. And then on the other hand, you have Bonta's legislation, which will basically get into sort of the specifics of what California wants to do moving forward. Is that correct?
Right, a California version. And so I'll make it a point to go and talk with the author and the staff about how that's going to flesh out over time.
Yeah, and I think one thing that would be of interest to me is to really sort of understand concretely what the differences are within the AGR and then within the bill by Bonta. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Great. That said, let's move on to item number 5, our wildfire smoke public health bill.
Okay. So the bill was introduced last Tuesday night, Assembly Bill 836. It's in your packet, attachment 5A. So it's pretty, and it's what we had submitted for as our what we had seen earlier from Ledge Council. So it didn't change in the final process. It identifies the Bay Area AQMD, the counties and partial counties that comprise it. It establishes the Clean Air Incentive Program to be administered by the district to provide funding through a grant program to retrofit ventilation systems, and so it's pretty. It's a pretty concise bill as it's written now. I have been talking with various potential supporters. I went to a meeting yesterday with the American Lung Association's Public Health Committee, which has various public health officers from the state and counties. And so I have some good feelings about some support coming from those groups. I've sent the bill language to one of the legislative advocates that works on behalf of several Bay Area cities, and so he's going to be pushing that around to get input from the cities that he represents. And then, on the other hand, we've also received inquiries about expanding the program to a statewide program. We expected that this would likely happen. And so what I've told people right now is that I'd like to work with the assembly member and if we expand it to a statewide program, that we we want to make sure that we do it on her terms and not you know, make the decision for her. And so so next week I'll be sitting down with her staff to lay out, you know, what we, you know, what we see as might be happening over the next couple weeks, and you know, how we would respond to that. So the bill was in print Tuesday night. They have to be in print for 30 days before they can go to hearing. And so the first date which this could be heard, I believe, will be the March 25th Assembly Natural Resources. I think that's a Monday afternoon. And so that'll be the first potential hearing date. And so we'll be working over the next week to develop fact sheets to make the rounds of the assembly members in the Natural Resources Committee, work with stakeholders, and start getting letters of support and talking about potential expansion.
And that committee meeting is 2 days before our next meeting here.
Yes. So on that note, at the last committee meeting, we had some interest from committee members about making a trip to Sacramento or doing some advocacy on behalf of the bill. And so what I would propose is I don't think it would be a good use of the committee's time to go to the natural resources hearing. And the reason I say that is not because it wouldn't be worthwhile for you to stand up and make the case, but because there's likely to be 40 or 50 bills that day. And this could be the first bill heard, or it could be the last bill heard. And so you might make the trip there and sit in the committee hearing room for 4 or 5 hours.
Which is fascinating.
So what I would propose instead is that we look for committee members that are interested. We look at a date sometime between now and then. I can work with Director Kim. He can poll the committee members. We can find a date when and I'll make some arrangements with assembly members and their staff to see if we can get some time for folks to go in and talk with some assembly members that, you know, would be important to talk to.
Yeah. So think about for the committee members. Think about your possible interest in being part of that delegation. All right, any questions about the Wicks bill? It's a three-pager, like you said. It's about as short as they get. I assume we'll get some more details over time, but sounds good.
I bet we get other people wanting on our dance card.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. All right, thank you for that, Ellen. With that said, we move to item number 6, public comment. We have no further slips. All righty, item number 7. As we wind this up, committee members, comments, or other business? Any new business? All right. We then will meet March 27th. That's a Wednesday in about a month. Again, 2 days after Natural Resources Committee. So with that said, we are adjourned. Mm-hmm.